Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend. Coming up, we're going to talk about some of the pandemic purchases that people have maybe come to regret.
I knew immediately it was a bad idea, and then just, you know, here it sits, months and months later.
But first, it is our chance to sit back and relax with two excellent humans. With us this week, we have Adora Namigade, WBEZ Metro reporter. Adora, hello.
Hey, what's up, Greta? Thanks for having me on your lovely show.
I'm so happy to have you. Also with us is Ariane Nettles, director of audio at Medill School of Journalism and recent birthday girl. Ari, hello.
Hello. Woo-hoo.
Okay, so I want to start with Beyonce. She dropped her seventh studio album last week. It is called Renaissance. It's phenomenal. It came out on Friday. Ari, your birthday was on Monday. How many times have you listened since it came out?
I really cannot count. And I mean, literally, like, it's not an exaggeration. I cannot count. Of course, I started listening at 11 p.m. Central Time, midnight Eastern Time, you know.
On Thursday.
On Thursday night with the rest of the Beehive. You know, we live tweeted through the whole experience. I love this album. This could be my number one Beyonce album. And that says a lot for me. It makes me feel amazing. Like, it was just like, oh, going into my birthday weekend and just like, it made me feel beautiful and powerful and like just bossy. And thank you, B.
That's just all the good things. Adora, do you have a favorite track on this? What do you think?
Yes, my favorite song is Cuff It.
Yes.
So it's hard because I'm trying to listen to the whole thing, but what happens is like I get on a song, I get stuck, and I'm like, sorry, I have to listen to this 500 times. It's like kind of disco-y.
Yes.
It's like she's a baddie, but it's like really subtle too.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good.
Oh, I mean, they're all so good. I think one of my favorites is Church Girl, just because it's so filthy and yet holy at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yes. It feels like Church Girl feels like a release.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just like at the like, you know, first couple seconds, I'm just like, yes, I'm gonna love on me. Hallelujah. And then I go from, you know, church gospel to like
tickle bitties
down. Right, exactly. You gotta shake that ass in the pretty tickle bitties. So get your ex up, get your math up.
I think it's fascinating just because, I mean, each song is a journey in and of itself. Like, they're all just so gorgeous. And, like, you can tell she just worked her ass off.
It's like,
know?
She'll never stop. It's amazing.
So there's also been a fair amount of drama surrounding the album's release. There was, like, a leak on, I think it was Tuesday of last week. There was a whole thing with sampling. She had to update some of her lyrics because she used an ableist slur. Ari, is this the kind of tea you're here for, or are you just like frustrated by the amount of critical attention someone who's that famous kind of inevitably gets?
I mean, I think the thing is, though, is that I very much expect it at that point. I mean, I think one thing, right, you know, like, you know, with the ableist word, I think we all can learn from that because, like, you know, again, like with Lizzo, like, we know that even our intentions don't matter, you know. There are a lot of words that, you know I am personally working on. Like, I think about how often, like, growing up, we'd be like, oh, that's lame, right? Like, that was just something that, yes, we said quite often. And, okay, but I can't say that anymore. And there's a reason why. And I shouldn't say, like, I can find new words. I can grow. We can all, language, you know, grows. And so I think that on that side of things, it's kind of good for us to have this type of stuff in the news so that we can kind of check ourselves and what we do. But then on the other hand, it's just kind of like, it can get outrageous, but you just know. And I think a lot of times people just hate Beyonce just because people love her. And it can get just so crazy. Like, if something is beloved really, really highly, then there's a group of people who feel like they must take it down, right? Instead of just being like, I love that y'all love that. I don't love it, but it's not for me, right? Because there's a lot of music that I'm sure is amazing and it's just not for me.
Of course.
And I don't have to tweet about it and talk bad about it because it's just not for me.
Yeah, someone else is still allowed to enjoy that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely co-sign everything Ari said. I think the Lizzo example is really good and powerful because when Lizzo was informed that she had an ableist slur in one of her lyrics, she just went on Twitter and posted, hey, you know, I didn't know about this, but I changed it. I'm willing to change and learn and grow. So thanks everyone for informing me.
Yep.
And I feel like that posture of humility and just owning up to and acknowledging mistakes, apologizing and being willing to take action and move forward is really the best that we can do, you know? Like Ari said too, I definitely grew up saying things that I didn't know were slurs until later on. And it's good that we're in a culture that is calling these things out. And yeah, I'm just trying to learn and grow too. So I understand Beyonce, you know, but I'm glad she updated the lyrics. And also, like Ari said, haters gonna hate. I don't know why some people are hating. You know, if you just don't like the music, don't listen. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not for you.
Totally.
Just be happy.
Yes, just be happy. So speaking of learning and growing, there was a tweet that made the rounds this week that really caught my attention. It was written by a guy whose handle is Steve on Speed. And he wrote, by age 30, you should have a group of friends that talk business, money, and fitness, not politics and pop culture. I first saw this because a coworker of mine retweeted it. And I was like, wow, Steve sounds really boring. But on the other hand, I mean, Ariane, you and I like literally texted this morning and you were like, hey, sorry, I'm late to respond. I was at the gym. And I was like, good for you. You know, I don't know. It's like, what's your take, Adora? How do you feel? You're not yet 30, right?
Absolutely. And as someone who is turning 30 in 3 months, I think I'm very qualified to talk about this transition to age 30. You know what I mean? But really, I just feel like, why can't people talk about all those things?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk about what we want to talk about. The only thing I feel like you shouldn't talk about is if your conversation is always about other people. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Susie did this. Bobby did that. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, what did you do? How are you growing? How are we growing?
Yes.
I might love politics. I might love pop culture. That's fine. And I might love business and wealth creation and working out. Those are all acceptable hobbies slash interests. It's just more about, is your orientation toward growth? And so I hope as I enter my 30s and even right now that I'm surrounding myself with people who want to grow and who want me to grow as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny thinking about it because, I mean, I've definitely talked to both of you about business and money and fitness, but also pop culture and dating and all kinds of other like really fun trash too, you know?
They're all related.
Yeah.
Business and politics are very related.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. I love, my best friend always says, I am not one thing, right? Like we are just like, we're these rounded things. And I am so excited, like Adora, that you are like going into this season of your life thinking like that. Cause I think that like younger me would have seen a tweet like that and been like, yup, that's right. So much, you know, like think like, or being more like kind of like, there are things that you talk about and things that you don't, versus now that I'm 37 and I'm one of the younger people in my like kind of friend groups. And most of us are like into this season of 40s and like this kind of like middle life type of things. Our bodies are changing. Our fitness regimens are different. Like what our bodies actually need for us to feel good is different, so we talk about it more, right? But it makes you feel better because you're like, oh, I'm not the only one going through these things, right? Like or we talk about what our doctor said. Hey, my doctor said I'm going through perimenopause. Have you heard about this thing? Like, what does this mean? I'm like, you know, so it's like really important to kind of have that support. But like, we could still talk about dating and going to the club and doing all the other stuff too. Even, you know, my friends laugh about me, but last year my birthday party was that I paid for everybody to go to SoulCycle.
And
we did a big old time at SoulCycle. And they were like, are you going to brunch? I was like, no, we're just going to SoulCycle.
And I like that you actually gave everyone else a gift on your birthday.
Yeah. And I gave them like some SoulCycle socks and like some water. And then I gave them like little mini champagne to drink after. So I gave them water and it said like four before. And then it was like, little champagne was like four after.
That's adorable.
You're helping me plan my birthday. So I just want
to. Yeah.
I really loved another tweet that came out kind of, you know, in reaction to that one from Rabinder Kanan that said, by age 30, you should have lower back pain, one failed relationship that almost broke you, and a constant sense of dread about where society is headed.
Oh, yeah. That means you're real. That means you're feeling it. You're connected. You're connected with the world.
I gotta say, though, we have to stop normalizing the idea that your body should be dusty and crusty by 30.
Sure.
That's true, but even the best, my healthiest friends, like, I'm talking about, like, people who are trainers, people who have the best diets ever. Everybody got back pain.
Yeah, like, we all got stuff back pain. Is still weird.
So I don't know what it is, but that back.
Oh, yeah. On Sunday, I was hanging out with my 4-year-old friend, and she talked me into doing a somersault. And I, like, I did this somersault and I whacked my ankle on, like, a corner. And, like, oh my God, like, it still hurts, you guys.
You're very honorable, though, for trying. You're very honorable.
Yeah. And I think it's really amazing that this story also shows the importance of having friends of all ages, you know, at all stages of life.
Another story from this week that caught our attention was from New York Magazine. They've been doing all this reporting commemorating the 10th anniversary of Tinder, which is, you know, kind of the original online hookup app. This makes me feel extremely old.
Me too. I'm like, whoa, I'm like a sage. Like, I can tell my children about way back when Tinder wasn't a thing when it was.
I mean, this means there are probably, like, 10-year-old children out there who, you know, who...
I mean, hopefully they're not on the app at 10.
No, like... I just mean who are a product of the app.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I really don't think 10-year-olds should be on Tinder, for the record. Ariane, does this also make you feel really old?
It does make me feel really old, because I do remember when, like, Tinder first came out, and I think, like, the shift in, like, our approach to online dating, and I think especially, like, culturally, like, as a Black woman, I remember it was like, ain't nobody gonna get on Tinder, like you're gonna find some serial killers and they're gonna kill you and you're gonna die. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I mean, and now, like, I'm still not a Tinder person, you know. I am a Hinge person, and, you know, I found a cute little, you know,
okay,
cute little somebody, you know. I have some luck, a little luck on Hinge, you
That's
know.
Great.
You know,
that's got, great.
But it does make me feel like, just to see that evolution is like, wow.
It's wild. Adora, have you been to any Tinder weddings?
Yes, I have. One of my closest friends, I stood in her wedding.
Wow.
She met her husband on Tinder. And it's funny because I know multiple couples who are married who met on Tinder specifically.
Huh.
And every single one of them is like, you know, we're really happy we met each other, but Tinder is horrible. Don't go on. And I'm like, that's interesting to me that you met this person you love and you married, but you, in the next breath, they're like, don't use Tinder, it's horrible.
I mean, I kind of feel like all of the apps are sort of like a necessary evil in this day and age,
right?
You know, where, like, it's kind of hard to make it work regardless. So,
right.
You know, here we are.
Especially with the pandemic, I think that yes. changed things for worse in terms of, like, in-person dating.
Yeah, totally. So, Ariane, since you have proven that you're such a good birthday planner, how do you think we should celebrate Tinder's 10th birthday?
Ooh.
I think we should all go on dates.
Okay.
But maybe not with, you know, you don't have to find a new Tinder date. It could be anybody. Like, I think I'm going to call up, you know, my Hinge person, you know, my newest, you know. Hey, boo, I'm calling up.
I love that.
Little date.
Yep. I know. That's great.
I just, you know.
I can tell you're trying really hard to play it cool.
I know, I'm trying to play it cool, but I'm struggling. I keep smiling. Or you could do a date with your besties. You know, you could have a homegirl date,
but I
think we should all go on a date.
I love that. Consider this my formal request to get into your friend circle.
you're already in it.
Thank you.
You're already in it because you're already friends with my friends, and now we're like best friends.
It's happening.
So you're stuck with me. You're stuck with me.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Ari, Adora, thank you both very much for coming on. Y'all are just, like, queens.
Thank you.
Takes one to know one.
True.
Up next, did you buy an air fryer during the pandemic and do you ever use it? In just a minute, we are going to talk about some of the pandemic impulse buys that people regret most.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Odds are, over the past 2 years, you bought something that you may have thought you would use a lot, but definitely haven't. And, you know, I get it. Isolation was a very weird time. We literally have all been there. From Peloton bikes to air fryers and patio heaters, there's a lot of stuff out there that people bought but don't necessarily use anymore. For one listener, Betsy, it was an Instapot.
Oh, yeah. I definitely regret purchasing an Instant Pot. It's just big, and there's like a little fear factor to using it. And even though while cleanup is easy, it still takes time. And by the time you get to all of that, you're too tired to carry it and put it away. At least I am. I regret it.
Here with us is Emily Stewart. She writes about business and economics for Vox. She recently wrote an article with the headline, "The Pandemic Impulse Purchases We Grew to Hate." Emily, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first question, what pandemic purchase do you regret? Do you have any?
I bought kind of a knockoff Roomba that I am staring at this very moment. I've used it about 7 times. And that is my whoops purchase.
Are you staring at it or is it staring at you?
Probably a bit of both. At this, I will say it kind of matches my decor, so I don't hate it as much as I could, but
there you go.
I don't know. I knew immediately it was a bad idea, and then just, you know, here it sits months and months later.
That's so funny. We put out a call to listeners about with this question, and, you know, we have Betsy with Instapot, but I think we also heard from someone who just like DM'd on us on Instagram and was like, why regret though? Like, why, you know, it seems like so much about having gone through the last, you know, 2 year, like fill in the blank amount of time is like, can't we all afford ourselves some grace? You know, like, it's okay that you bought the thing that you only used 7 times.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, like, beyond the missing cash, kind of who cares? And I think for a lot of this stuff, you know, people did get something out of it in the moment, even if it was short-lived. You know, like, it was a really weird time, it was a really bad time. And buying stuff sometimes makes us feel a little bit more in control. And it does give you a little bit of a dopamine hit. So it's not the end of the world, assuming, like, you didn't accidentally tank your bank account to buy something you never used.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, like, what better way to mitigate the existential insanity of a global pandemic than just, like, buying some shit, you know?
Right. I think, like, kind of here for me, the differentiator is, like, okay, so I have my Bob Sweep, that's what it's called, I don't use. But it's another thing if I bought a house in the suburbs and all of a sudden I'm sitting and looking around and thinking, wait a minute, what did I do? There's been a lot of polling that shows about 2/3 of new homebuyers have some regret around the decisions, which I think has been interesting and, you know, also makes sense in terms of just how much money people spent at the time, how competitive it was. You know, remember the stories of people like waiving inspections.
Oh, God.
That's great. You know, and that's then you just learn afterwards, like, oh, no, whoops. So I think there are, you know, that's, I think, been the one that we've seen so much. Because, again, you know, oh, well, you bought roller skates or whatever, like, fine. But you bought a house and it's a little bit tricky.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the one I could think of. I did buy an air fryer, but I don't regret it. I did buy a little egg cooker that I don't really use, but it was $15, you know, which is like, that's fine.
Right. You know, that's fine. That's fine. And I had one of my good friends was buying like different roller skates and stuff like that. And like, I don't know if she ever used them, but whatever, you know, it just, like I said, it's not the end of the world for certain things.
Exactly. So how much fun was it to report this story? I just like, it must've been pretty fun to like, you know, find these people and talk to them about the ridiculous purchases they've made.
Right. I mean, it was fun. And it's just nice to talk to people who, you know, obviously are a little bit lighthearted about it. I talked to one guy out in LA who'd bought kind of a fancy hipster bike, him and his partner. And you know, they did the millennial thing of they watched a bunch of videos about the bikes and they bought the special locks and the special helmets. And then they realized that they live in an area that's really hot and really hilly. And actually didn't want a bike everywhere. And he said, you know, he'd even gone as far as to get a hitch attached to his car so that way he could take the bike somewhere, then they could bike somewhere. And he used it exactly one time. And, you know, he sold the car now. And it was funny, but one of the things he said too is, you know, it's not like I was going to develop a new personality. Like he said, oh, I'd known somebody who was from the Netherlands who biked everywhere. And I thought I was going to be the type of person who's biking to a cafe or biking to, you know, the bookstore and live like a nice little cute lifestyle.
And speaking of bikes, we can't have this conversation without talking about Peloton. It is a company that has gone through a journey during the pandemic.
Right. I mean, everybody kind of remembers when the pandemic hit. Peloton was really kind of uniquely positioned to really pick up some market share, to really sell people a lot of bikes. Like I bought a Peloton in 2020 and I had to wait months for it. I think what happened there was kind of Peloton had a moment in that kind of when that happened that was, did this pull forward people that were going to buy bikes anyway, or did they expand their market? And I think the answer that we know now is that they kind of pulled forward people that were maybe going to buy bikes anyway. But the one thing that I always kind of say about this is I really like my Peloton. There is exactly a finite number of Pelotons that I will buy, which is one. And so with Peloton, everybody got very excited. You know, investors got very excited. You look at the valuation of the company was a lot more months ago than it is right now. And the company's really suffered because, again, people are only going to buy so many Peloton bikes. Not to mention, the story is, you know, it's a tale as old as time with fitness equipment. People get it and then they don't use it. This has happened forever with Nordic Tracks or treadmills. How many people have a piece of fitness equipment sitting in their homes that they don't use?
I haven't thought about a Nordic Track in a really long time.
They're still around. I see their ads.
So, you know, now that we are, what, 2 years and some change into this situation, and some people say the pandemic is over. Obviously, it isn't. Are you getting any sense of trends of what people are buying these days?
I mean, we definitely are starting to see people switch back to buying, to spending more money on services than they were goods. You know, the whole story of kind of the pandemic and the supply chain crunch was that everybody kind of sat at home and bought a bunch of stuff. And because you had a lot of extra money because you weren't maybe going out to eat anymore. You weren't going on vacation. A lot of people got stimulus checks, obviously. And so now we are sort of seeing people start to buy on services again. You know, people spending money on things like a vacation that you couldn't go on a couple of years ago. You know, obviously the icky thing now is that we're dealing with inflation, which is making the entire buying cycle, makes going to the store, makes doing anything, spending money on anything super annoying and very frustrating and very painful for people in ways big and small.
Totally. What's your advice for somebody who likes to buy things when they're sad?
I mean, I do think to a certain extent, it can be a little bit, it depends what you're buying, right? Like there is research that really shows that sometimes it does make people feel a little bit better because, again, you feel like you have a little bit more control. It kind of helps you like not think about your own anxieties in the moment. But I think in the pandemic stuff, a lot of people kind of thought that their situations were going to be permanent. And they weren't. You know, I talked to one woman for this story who she and her husband had bought a pandemic puppy, which a ton of people did.
Yes.
And the dog has sort of not ruined their retirement, but changed their retirement. You know, this is going to live for the next 10, 15 years. And one thing she said was, you know, we can't really travel. We can't really be spontaneous. Like we always have to think of what are we going to do with the dog? And I think sometimes just in terms of when we're thinking about how we're feeling about our spending, which is obviously always emotional, is how permanent of a decision am I making? Like my Bob Sweep will sit here and who cares? And at some point I'll get rid of it. But if I had a dog, like, that would fundamentally change the way I can or cannot live my life. And 2 years ago, I was spending a lot more time at home than I do now.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, Emily, thank you so much for talking with me. This was very fun.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing this and for having me. I'm excited.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Did you know we have a newsletter? It's pretty fun. It comes out every Friday morning, and Anna and I both put links to fun stuff to read and watch and cook and check out. Anna is very good at finding weird wildlife news, which is always a delight. You can sign up for it at wbez.org/nerdetteaf. And Maggie Civet builds that newsletter. The show is produced by me and Anna Bauman, and our executive producer is Brendan Banasak. We will see you next week.
My four-year-old friend. Aww.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.